Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, February 12th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest box office news and getting into the biggest Super Bowl trailers. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com. I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
And staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, you are recording from a distant location today, so if your audio sounds a little weird to the listener's ear, that's why. I just want to throw that out there up top. Okay, so let's get into it. Ryan, we don't really have a ton of box office news to talk about on today's episode, but let's get that stuff out of the way first. Tell me, for example, how did Lisa Frankenstein do this week?
Just to preface before we get into the specific numbers, this was the worst box office weekend we've had in over 14 months. It was abysmal. So Lisa Frankenstein, we had sort of talked a little bit about the optimistic possibility there. Didn't get anywhere near that. It made $3.8 million on over 3,100 screens. So not great. Didn't really break through in the way that Focus was hoping it would. Even $10 million wouldn't have been amazing, but that might have been enough to help a little bit. It's kind of minimum. From what I've heard, the movie didn't cost all that much. I think it had like a $14 million budget, so it could still be okay in the end. But as we've talked about, theaters need something reliable to show here, and this just wasn't really it. So, mm-hmm.
Do you have any other notable box office stuff that we should touch on before we take a break?
That Argyle managed to top the box office in its second weekend by dropping 63% after a disappointing opening weekend. That tells you the state of things. The only other thing I would mention is that because things were so bleak, Dune, the re-release that Warner Brothers did, actually managed to crack the top 10 at number 9 with just $1.6 million and a $790 per screen average. So that's where we're at.
Wow. Okay. So not ideal, certainly. Definitely this rough stretch, and we'll see if Bob Marley, One Love, and Madam Web can maybe turn things around a little bit this week. yeah, exactly. So, we'll see how likely that is. Let's take a break real quick, and then we'll come back and get into the real meat of the show. All right. So Super Bowl happened last night. Jacob, you were working it for slashfilm.com. What was your experience like with the game? Did you actually have a chance to like watch it at all? Did you care about it at all? I know Ryan cares a ton. So I was curious about your participation, Jacob.
I went into the game completely agnostic on the teams. I really don't follow the NFL, but I do watch Super Bowl. But as is always tradition when you work on a movie website, the first half of the Super Bowl Sunday presentation is nonstop work. I was juggling it. 100 different things. Brad was on there with me getting trailers published. I was working with our writers, Devin and Michael, to get, you know, other things written up in response to the trailers. Devin wrote a really cool article about the Loki season 2 connection in the Deadpool 3 trailer, which is something that is, I want to say, you don't realize you need to have the article until you see the trailer. The first half of the game, I barely saw football. If football was playing, I was hunkered into my computer screen, getting stuff edited, published, coordinating pitches. And when courses were happening, I had to keep watching the commercials to make sure that it was not something that would need to cover. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito being on screen together again for a commercial, you know, is really neat. So that's the kind of thing. It's like, oh, I guess we should write that up. And we did. Mm-hmm. The first half of the game was just absolutely didn't see a second of football. The back half of the game is traditionally when the big commercials and trailers, you know, stop playing as much. Pretty much nothing noteworthy happened for film enthusiasts in the back half of that show. So I didn't get to watch the game as it actually seemed to get good, because from what I can gather, the first half was a pretty dull affair before that overtime started happening.
Yeah, certainly. That was my experience with it. And man, I just thought it was like a kind of a rough first half of football. It just kind of felt like a little bit of a sloppy game, or kind of, maybe not sloppy, that might be the wrong word, but like a, I don't know, just kind of like a back and forth where like not a ton was happening. It just didn't seem like, it was not very dynamic performance from either team, really, I would say, in the first half. But Ryan, you're like the biggest football fan on this episode. So what was your experience like watching the game, and what did you ultimately think about it?
Yeah, I mean, that was, out of every team that made the playoffs this year, this was the most boring combination of teams that could have made it to the Super Bowl. So I was a little disappointed on that in that regard, but yeah, that first half was like, it just didn't look like two Super Bowl teams, but then it really turned around in the back half and became a very good game despite itself.
Yeah.
First time we've had a back-to-back Super Bowl champion in 20 years in the Kansas City Chiefs. So we moved right from that Patriots dynasty into the Chiefs dynasty. Congratulations, football fans. You'll lose one way or the other. But yeah, no, it ended up being a good game. And there were, as we'll talk about, there were a couple of trailers I was quite excited about. So,
but Ryan, I have to ask, as a resident football guy, what about Taylor Swift? I'm joking. You don't have to ask me.
Oh, no, okay. I guess I have thoughts on this, but I don't know if we even want to bother with that.
No, I just felt like we needed to poke fun at the fact that every single thing last night was Taylor Swift.
It was a lot.
Okay, so I'm going to link to a few of the articles that we've written about, like some of the ads and stuff. There were a couple that I don't think we've written anything about that I just thought were like either amusing or notable in some way. I particularly appreciated the Christopher Walken BMW ad where everybody was doing god-awful Christopher Walken impressions to his face. I thought that was somewhat amusing. And I like the Aubrey Plaza, Nick Offerman Mountain Dew commercial where Aubrey Plaza comes out and says, "Hi, I'm America's sweetheart," which I don't know. I just appreciated that. I thought that was like one of the better Super Bowl commercials I've seen in a long time. So I'll link to a few of the more interesting ads here. But yeah, let's get into the trailers themselves. Jacob, actually, before we like get into the nitty gritty of these, you and I were talking right before we started recording, and you had like a sort of thesis on what the trailer watching experience was like for the Super Bowl this year. Tell me about that.
Movie trailers on the Super Bowl used to be fun, Ben. They used to be an exciting thing that I look forward to. And now I don't, and here's why. Because in the days before YouTube, back in the olden times, when we all learned things at the same time instead of in fandom waves, you know, where like the super fans learn first and the casual fans, then regular folks learn during the Super Bowl. We all saw the trailer reveals at the same time, and those trailers had to be crafted. They had to be immaculate. They had to be 30-second spots that took advantage of that extremely expensive Super Bowl advertising money and sold the biggest possible audience, the biggest imaginable audience on your movie in 30 seconds. They had to be pieces of art, man. And now it's just a really chaotic, clumsy, trimmed-down version of a full trailer that ends with a line saying, "Watch the whole trailer online." And I'm like, "No, I don't think I will. Nothing you showed me there interests me whatsoever. So I will not watch your full trailer online. You should have hooked me in the very expensive Super Bowl ad space you already bought." So this is just my way of saying that I used to be actively excited about, ooh, what's going to show up? What trailer is going to be there? Because I know that they had to wow us. And now they don't have to wow us. They have to just let us know that the full trailer is online, a commercial for a commercial. And that's no good. No bueno, Ben.
I agree. Ryan, did you have any thoughts on that take?
I mean, I definitely still get excited about the right trailer, but I think Jacob's absolutely right in that what they're cutting for the Super Bowl specifically, it really does. I don't know if you guys remember, it was probably about 10 years ago that trend started where they would release like a 15-second trailer for the trailer. Like, and then so what these Super Bowl trailers feel like now is like 30-second trailers for the trailer. And it's not even like a proper TV spot. It is just a much more condensed glimpse at what you can go look at online. And yeah, I do think that if you're going to spend that money, maybe you should try to design something a little more eye-catching on its own. But I think the nature of the beast as it exists, that just is what it is. And it is unfortunate, but I do think that's true. Because what happened yesterday is me and a bunch of my friends, the Deadpool 3 thing came up, and then we were like, we need to go to a quiet room and watch the actual Deadpool trailer because that's not the situation we were in. So yeah. I do generally agree with that.
Yeah. Okay, so Despicable Me 4, they released a trailer for that movie. I am like completely out on this franchise, never seen a single one of these movies, and often annoyed when I am forced to engage with any sort of Minion content, in a passive way even. But I have to say, I got to give a shout out to this Despicable Me 4 trailer because it was one of the only things that I saw that cast artificial intelligence in the proper light, which is right now it's mostly useless and it's making the world a more terrible place. So I just thought it was like a bold move for a studio to take what is an objectively true position, but one that a lot of big companies seem to be kind of scared of leaning into for whatever reason. So to do it in a Despicable Me 4 trailer is a little odd, but I'll take what I can get at this point. So either of you have any thoughts beyond that on Despicable Me 4?
I sort of took your stance on it, where like I couldn't possibly care less about the Minions or these characters at this point. However, I will say, like, I'm saying nothing against this franchise. This might be the only surefire billion-dollar movie of the year, and we need it. But I do think it's cool that, like, yeah, they did just, like, go, hey, why can't we do this? Like, they don't have to do this for the ad angle, but they could. And it generated a lot of conversation with people that otherwise would not be talking about this movie. Like, my Twitter feed was lousy with people being like, maybe I was too hard on the Minions, you know, like, so it did sort of accomplish its job in the way that Jacob was sort of, you know, like saying that these Super Bowl ads typically won't anymore. So I got to commend him for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What did you guys think about the trailer for A Quiet Place Day One? Jacob, what did you think about this?
My main issue with The Quiet Place Part 1 conceptually is that it's just going to be a two-hour version of the first 10 minutes of Part 2. Haven't we seen this before? Is it just going to be, hey, more of the same, but in a big city and no one knows the rules, so they're just dying faster? I don't know. I love Lupita Nyong'o. I think the director here is promising, but it's just, I'm not so sure what this trailer is selling beyond more A Quiet Place. And for a horror franchise that was built upon being so unique and having such a clever special hook, it doesn't feel like enough. And I'm waiting to be, I'll see it. I'm just complaining. You know, I'll see it opening day then. but it's one of those things where I wish there was more to this movie beyond the hook being, it happened on day one. And that's all it seems to be special so far, but we'll see.
Yeah. I find myself like, sharing the same thoughts that you do about the subject matter, but I feel like I'm a little bit more excited about the people involved here. Like, yes, I love Lupita Nyong'o. Jaimin Hansu is in this. Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things and Michael Sarnowski is the director. And he was the guy behind that really terrific Nicolas Cage movie Pig from a couple years ago. So just the fact that he's involved here, I'm excited about that until I'm given reason until I'm like proven otherwise, basically. Like, yes, this could be just another example of a talented indie director being sucked into a blockbuster machine and forced to churn out a mediocre final product. But I'm going to choose to believe that that maybe there's something a little bit more interesting going on here, just to try to be optimistic about it. But Ryan, do you have any thoughts on this trailer at all?
Look, nothing is going to match the sheer magic of that first A Quiet Place movie. It was my favorite movie of 2018. I love that movie. I thought Part 2 was very good. But I've accepted at this point that, you know, the genie is out of the bottle. Like, we know what this universe is. So at this point, I'm just in for, like, is it going to be fun? Is it going to be cool? Is it going to be more of that stuff that I like? And this trailer, I think my only concern is that it almost looks like it's too big for itself. Like, some of it looks very CGI, very big, very expensive. But I'm still in, like, for all the reasons you said, Ben, like the people. And I also think it's interesting. It looks like Lupita Nyong'o's character is like a homeless woman. And so I think there's kind of an interesting thing to be said there about like her survival skills and things like that. And then also, we have not mentioned Alex Wolff is in this movie. And anytime he's in a horror movie where things go wrong, you know, it tends to work out pretty well.
So. Yeah. Famously, he was in Hereditary, really great in that movie.
So I'm in on it. Like, I'm definitely going to go. I think I'm more with you where it's like, until I'm given a reason to think it's going to suck, I believe it's going to be good, especially because Pig was so good. Yeah. I'm optimistic for sure. Even though the trailer itself was kind of okay.
Yeah. But yeah. So you mentioned big, CG, expensive. Those were three of the adjectives that I applied to the Wicked trailer, which is another one that we should probably talk about. Jacob, do you have any thoughts on Wicked? Like, what's your relationship with Wicked, before this movie exists? Like, did you ever see the musical? Are you familiar with the music or the characters or the story or anything? What's your Wicked thoughts right now?
I'm a big fan of Gregory Maguire's book, his novel, inspired the Broadway show. The Broadway show is very different than the book. The book asks, what if the Wicked Witch of the West was actually an extremely complicated person in a complicated world? whereas the musical dumbs that down to, what if she was actually good? What if she was actually the hero? And it's a very simplified version of a very fascinating, layered literary critique. That said, I like the musical just fine. It has some really good songs. Defying Gravity really is that good. And like, this trailer is really stunning. There's some really awesome visuals here. It looks like a full-blown fantasy film, even though they are hiding the fact that it's a musical. I mean, it worked for Wonka, and I guess it seems to have worked for Mean Girls, which is a bigger hit than I thought it would be. But it's so weird to see one of the most acclaimed Broadway musicals of the past 20 years being sold as a straight-up fantasy film with only a little bit of music in the background. For those of us who know that Cynthia Erivo is going to be belting her way through this movie. Yeah, Cynthia Erivo is reason enough for me to be excited, but the trailer looks, like I said, really big and lush, and I'm here for a musical that has the grandiosity of that used to be given to musicals back in the day. So I hope it's big. I hope it's good, and I hope it has that the same energy I think John Chu brought to In the Heights, which I thought was a really well directed movie.
Ryan, I know you're not as in on musicals. Were you impressed at all by what you saw in this Wicked trailer?
I think it looks expensive. I think it looks really expensive. But I also think it's one of those movies that's probably going to do better than people think it's going to do. It strikes me as a good play. But I love Cynthia Erivo. I think she is such a movie star that we need to make a bigger movie star than she is. She's so great. So I'm all for
what's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If this is the vehicle to get more people to love her, maybe get her an Oscar nomination, maybe get her whatever, I'm all for that. And just because it's, I have no relationship to Wicked whatsoever, other than trailer. And I think the only thing I'll say is, if you're adapting a big, lush Broadway musical, I know it's based on the world of Wizard of Oz or whatever, but it would be cool if it looked a little less CG and a little more tangible. I definitely felt that a little bit looking at it, but I think it looks like what will get people to go see it is more or less what I think.
I'm really curious how the two-parter thing is going to play with this movie specifically, because we've been talking about that over the past year. It seems like a lot of big movies have done the this is actually a secret part one. I mean, we knew about it because we pay attention to this stuff, but I feel like a lot of mainstream audiences kind of feel blindsided when these movies like Fast X and Across the Spider-Verse just kind of end and tee up a part two. And I've heard stories of people saying that people were groaning in the theater when the credits hit for movies like that have done this. And Wicked is going to be another one of those part one movies, but of course they don't say that in the trailer. So I just wonder, Jacob, you know it fairly well, they're probably going to end with Defying Gravity, because I believe that's the end of act one in the original stage show, and that's the highest high of the entire story. So do you think that sending people out on that literal high note is going to be enough to sort of offset the disappointment that people might feel knowing that this is, or realizing that this is just part one of the story?
Yeah, I'm not convinced that two movies is the right call here. I mean, Defying Gravity isn't just the end of act one. It's sort of what kicks the character into her arc, and it's sort of they're just going to watch a character go to the point where you want her to be in the halfway point of the story. It's not just cutting it in half. This is where an audience wants to be, at the halfway point of the narrative being told. I don't think this is a good choice, and it definitely reeks of a little bit of a good old fashioned corporate greed, because you know that wicked recognizable name. Especially since the back half of the show doesn't have nearly as many good songs as the front half of the show. It's a problem. I have very real problems with this.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, the movie number two in this saga is just going to be, it just feels like they're setting themselves up for disappointment. But I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. This was one of those experiences where I really felt what Jacob was talking about earlier, where I thought the 30 second teaser trailer that actually aired during the Super Bowl was kind of a poor trailer. Like, the phrase "What a wonderful day" was repeated over and over again, and I just like did not really, I was not really buying what this movie was selling. But then I watched the full trailer and I was like, oh, this looks really good. So I don't know if you guys had that same experience where you just went and checked out the full trailer, and I guess what were your thoughts on this? Ryan, let's start with you. I know you're a huge Planet of the Apes guy.
I am. I will say this. I know the whole point is to talk about these trailers, but I did see the little spot on TV, but I am so unbelievably deliriously excited for this movie, and they already have my money probably at least twice. So I didn't watch the full trailer, but I have heard from a lot of people that it was the best trailer of the day if you actually watched the trailer. And I think that I will say this, that 30-second spot was an odd way to sell it. It really felt like, because that was probably the first time a lot of people learned that this movie's coming. And that was a weird, weird little 30-second spot. And I don't think that at all did a good job of to Jacob's old point, if you were going to do like a 30-second spot to let people know these movies were coming back, you probably maybe would have wanted to lean like a little bit on like, hey, Caesar came before and now there's this, like, you know, connect it in that other trilogy to other people's minds. That from a marketing standpoint, that's where I get a little bummed out here, but I am personally still deliriously excited about this movie.
Hey, look, I respect the fact that you didn't watch the full thing. I didn't watch the there was a new TV spot for The Fall Guy, which I just completely opted out of, because for the same reason, like, they already have my money. I don't need to see any more there. I'm fully sold. Jacob, did you watch the full trailer for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, this is what inspired my little mini lecture earlier. It's just, I can imagine a really, really, really incredible, eye-grabbing 30-second version of this trailer to play the Super Bowl. Instead, they sold it with a really bad ad for the trailer, and it's a problem. I'm gonna be upset about this all day, and then tomorrow I'll be fine.
Okay, the one that I was surprised by is the trailer for Twisters, which is a movie that I've just had like a huge question mark around this. As soon as it was announced that Lee Isaac Chung, the director of Minari of all films, was going to be the director of this, I just didn't really know if if a promising indie director was going to get sucked up into the blockbuster machine, and how he was going to be able to do something that was like so tonally different than what he did with Minari, which is a really wonderful movie, but it's a very small, quiet, sort of intimate family drama. And I was pleasantly surprised by what I saw with Twisters. It made me want to go back and rewatch the original. I've like got excited about the idea of rewatching that right before going to see this in theaters. And Glenn Powell looks great as always. I was like on board with this. So did any of you have any thoughts on the Twisters trailer?
All I'll say is that I'm not saying I'm immune to nostalgia, because I'm not, but I think I'm very aware of it and resistant to it and able to put up the right walls. But something about seeing the Twisters font, that 1996 ass font back, made me go, "Oh, this really exists. This actually is a thing." And as somebody who grew up in Texas in the Southwest, and has always been very, very aware of tornadoes, Twister was one of those movies you grew up and like just constantly watching over and over and over again, is this weird like little nightmare reflection of things that could actually happen to you outside if the weather got bad enough. So I have a very deep, unusual love for Twister, and this trailer was hitting all those nostalgia millennial buttons. Damn you trailer.
Ryan, any thoughts on this one?
I guess I gotta be the wet blanket here. I loved cowboy hat Glenn Powell. I love Daisy Edgar Jones more than I can possibly convey. Boy, this trailer looks—it's like the CGI is not very good. I didn't think.
At least in 1996, CGI isn't that the point, Ryan? 96 is for us millennials. It's for us.
Maybe. I don't know. It looks. I did like the 1996 ass font, as you explained it, but like other than that, I this one gave me like bad feelings. Like this one gave me like, oh no, like something. I don't know. It something about it rubbed me the wrong way. Like I just can smell disaster coming and not like in a good way. And yeah, I don't know. Not maybe not that like even everybody hates it, you know, but just that it's just not like. I don't know. It didn't do anything for me. And more than that, I think my spidey sense went off of like when I first saw that Taron Egerton Robin Hood trailer and I was like, oh no. I was like, someone's going to lose a lot of money. And that was sort of like what I think this trailer said to me. I would love to be wrong because we need this thing to be a hit, but that was maybe where my head went.
Oh man. Yeah. I just personally, selfishly really hope you're wrong. Cause I'm excited about this one, Ryan. Okay. So Deadpool and Wolverine, probably the biggest one, that we should talk about here. And, you know, they've been teasing Deadpool 3 for a long, long time. This is, I guess, is our first official look at any video. I believe, I don't think they've ever shown a teaser. No, or anything
this was
like
the
that.
First bit of footage at all.
Yeah. So, Jacob, I'll toss to you. What did you make of this?
Speaking of somebody who actually really still likes Deadpool 1 and 2, I don't know if people turn those movies or not, or if it's cool like them. I really enjoyed both Deadpool films. I really like this trailer. I think the full version is where it's at. Once again, the short version barely sells what's going to make this movie funny and entertaining, which is just the very self-aware fourth wall breaking Deadpool stuff going right after the MCU, right after Disney. There's a pegging joke like with Disney in the same sentence, maybe it was, oh yeah, this is still Deadpool. They clearly are. If Disney asks them to tone it down, you can't tell from the trailer. I'm not as excited to see Hugh Jackman back yet, because I thought Logan was such a good send off for that character. But I'm still surprisingly on board with Deadpool. I watched the trailer and said, oh yeah, I'm ready for more of this. Maybe it's not everybody's cup of tea. Maybe people find it obnoxious, but I like Ryan Reynolds in this part, and you know what? Let's see him. Let's see if they let him go after Disney as much as we hope they do. Well, fingers crossed.
I actually thought it was smart to hold Hugh Jackman back in this trailer. And that is the part that I am the most interested in, despite having really liked Logan and thinking that that was a strong send-off for that character. But like, if they're leaning so hard into this that the movie is literally called Deadpool and Wolverine, I'm just like very curious to know that it's not just or to realize or have confirmed that it's not just like a quick cameo. This is like a true two-hander type of thing. So I'm just curious to see what happens with this. I'm like not fully sold on Sean Levy as a director. He's very, very hit or miss for me. And I really don't care for the first two Deadpool movies, but I feel like if there is something that's going to be able to pull me in, it's maybe going to be the return of Hugh Jackman in some way. So yeah, I find myself in like a wait and see mode, but Ryan, what did you think about this one?
I'm with Jacob. I, especially the first Deadpool, but the second one as well. I think those are phenomenal movies, and yeah, I feel like the tide has turned a bit. I do feel like there's a bit of, it's suddenly not cool to like those movies. I don't particularly care. And I am, Logan to me is one of those masterpieces that transcends the superhero genre. Like it is a genuinely fantastic film and an excellent send off for that character. So I am very hesitant about this. However, if they handle it just right and like, you know, okay, this, it doesn't, you know, you don't feel like Logan is negated in the process, then like I can get behind it. But I will say, without calling it this, it definitely looks like Deadpool kills the Marvel universe and like the old Fox universe. And that is pretty cool. Like, and because even, I don't even know how many people realized it, but the one guy in there was Pyro from X-Men 2. Like, and so I'm like, oh wow. Like they're like, they are going to bring back a bunch of just like people we completely forgot about. And I'm betting anything, they all won't be on screen very long. And so that seems like kind of a lot of fun to me. And yeah, I'm on board for this. I'm totally on board for this. And
I'm curious what you think, Ryan, about them clearly using characters and ideas from Loki season 2. Very heavily in this trailer and very heavily in the movie's plot. I mean, I'm assuming it will be structured as, you know, you'll know what the TVA is immediately. If you're a newcomer who just watches Deadpool but not Marvel stuff, you'll figure it out in a few seconds. But it feels like the kind of choice that was made back when people thought the Disney Plus shows would be a much bigger deal than they actually turned out to be.
It does, but I do believe doing this in a Deadpool movie makes the most sense because he can sort of poke fun at the idea and he probably can just be like, make it simple for me. And then like, you know, like, or what, however you accomplish that. And I believe you can make this work in the confines of a Deadpool movie without confusing people. And so I think that like, it's not Owen Wilson, right? Like it's not some of these things that like you're expected to understand right away. I think if it's just more like, cause a lot of people have seen, you know, Doctor Strange's Multiverse of Madness, a ridiculous number of people have seen Spider-Man No Way Home. The concept of the multiverse is not like impossible at this point. So as long as you can convey that this is like an organization that exists within the multiverse, I think it'll be okay. But yeah, I do think that this was definitely a decision that was made when they thought everyone was going to watch these shows. And because I haven't even finished Loki season two yet, full disclosure. Like, so, you know, yeah. So I do think that's a thing. But I think they're also going to be smart enough about how they manage that.
It's weird because, like, I agree that that part feels like a leftover from a different age almost. But at the same time, this trailer is like, he's saying he's Marvel Jesus. He's going to be the one who's able to sort of like, basically breathe life back into the MCU, which seems like a more modern thing. Like that seems like almost like a reshoot type of thing where, and I'm curious how much of the movie changed when Disney realized, okay, we're just gonna, you know, scrap our release slate for superhero stuff, except for this movie, and pin all of our hopes on Deadpool 3 being like a huge deal. And like maybe the turning point that can basically like get us back on track with the superhero stuff. So I just wonder like if the true story will ever come out about like how much this movie changed and how much weight it has on its shoulders and like what the filmmakers felt about that and how many things needed to be tweaked along the way and all that. It just sounds like a really fascinating sort of behind the scenes story. So
yeah, my suspicion
is perfect for this kind of job where you have to balance studio politics above making a good movie. Sorry, side note.
What were you gonna say, Ryan?
I was just gonna say, overall, Deadpool 3, I think this is a movie that probably has had like 15 scripts. Like, you know, like if you go back to when they were developing it right after Deadpool 2 and figuring out if they're going to do an X-Force movie first and then the Disney buyout. And then I think there were two or three versions that we knew about before this one got greenlit with Sean. So I think there is, but this movie has been through the ringer as far as like versions go. And I do think the one thing they might've done during that shutdown was maybe tweak some things in regarding like, to your point, like maybe we do need to be more self-referential. Maybe we do need to take out references to things and maybe we do need to try to correct some of that stuff. And yeah, I do think that there was a lot of thought put into the idea that we need this to work and we need this to work badly. So there's pressure on for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to do it for today's show. You can find more about all of the movies and the stories that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of them in the show notes, so you can check them out directly there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. There's a link for that in the show notes as well. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a moment to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That does help us out a lot. Tell your friends, spread the word. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.